Model Test 8.
Section A. Mini Lecture.
In this section, you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the mini lecture once only. While listening to the mini lecture, please complete the gap-filling task with no more than 3 words for each gap. Make sure the word or words you fill in is or are both grammatically and semantically acceptable. You may use the blank sheet for note-taking. You have 30 seconds to preview the gap-filling task. Now, listen to the mini-lecture. When it is over, you will be given 3 minutes to check your work.
Well, my topic today is architecture, and to be specific, what I am going to talk about is World Trade Center, the skyscrapers. After watching the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center collapse, twice reducing 110 stories to 5 in less than a minute, it's hard to see how the buildings could have ever been considered safe. It's even harder to see how engineers can look at the events of September 11, 2001, as a relative success in terms of architectural strength. Consider this. The rubble at the site weighed 1 million tons. The site spanned a vast 16 acres. The nonstop cleanup, conducted day and night, still took the better part of a year. Even if the greatest loss, so many human lives, is excluded, there's no arguing. This was, in all senses, an enormous disaster. And yet, for all the destruction and for all the disbelief, Americans felt as they watched the towers collapse. Engineers unanimously say that the buildings performed magnificently after terrorists crashed a plane into the side of each. Because the towers stayed standing for about an hour each, they gave rescue workers enough time to get tens of thousands of people out. The towers owed their resilience largely to their architect, Minoru Yamasaki, and structural engineer Leslie Robertson. The men's original design enabled the buildings to withstand the impact of the planes, only after jet fuel fires weakened their steel beams. Constructed with cheaper methods, many other buildings would have collapsed immediately. Today's most common skyscraper design places vertical support beams throughout a building. Others have diagonal beams as their means of support. But the World Trade Center was built before those were the standards. Raised in the 1960s, the glass and steel towers were designed and built with innovation and special attention to safety and stability because of their extreme height. Engineers wanted to make sure the towers could withstand hurricane force winds of up to 200 miles per hour. On an especially windy day, the towers could sway up to several feet in either direction. With memories of a 1945 plane crash into the Empire State Building lurking in their minds, engineers and architects also designed the towers to withstand the force of a Boeing 707. There are several reasons to make the tower magnificent. Firstly, the engineers agreed that the secret to ensuring the buildings would stand tall under extreme circumstances rested in their supporting steel columns, which were set up differently from most skyscrapers. Secondly, the majority of the beams framed the outside walls of the towers. 61 beams per 211-foot side provided maximum reinforcement. Engineers often refer to this as a solid steel tube design, and rightly so compared to most buildings, which may have vertical support columns spaced as far as 20 feet apart. Thirdly, the outer columns help the buildings withstand a huge wind load, but another smaller group of steel beams shot through the centers of the buildings and bore the main load of supporting the towers. This core, which housed elevator shafts and stairwells, was connected to the outer steel columns by still more steel running through each concrete floor. The double support may have been what ultimately kept the building standing for so long. What actually caused the twin towers to fall? All the same, no amount of reinforcement could have prevented the tower's eventual collapse. Immediately after September 11th, most engineers thought the fires, and not the plane's impacts, were to blame. The theory has generally held up. A federal investigation was inconclusive, but it did conform with engineers' suspicions. The steel columns didn't actually melt, but as the fires inside the building consumed more and more jet fuel, about 24,000 gallons of it, they overwhelmed the building's sprinkler systems, started to weaken the concrete insulation around the steel, and then deliberated the steel itself. Most of the fluffy fireproofing material on the tower's steel columns was blasted off by the plane crashes. With flames reaching temperatures of 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit and higher, the steel columns started to warp and the top floors buckled. From then on, the towers had no more chance of standing than a building targeted for demolition. Their collapse was the first known instance of steel buildings collapsing because of fire alone. In fact, the collapse played out just like a controlled demolition. To destroy a building, experts usually place explosives not just on the lowest three floors, but also on the higher floors. With the top floors exploding, demolition experts can create what they call a pancake effect, which you might realize is the same as a downward domino effect. Unlike dominoes, of course, the towers fell straight down rather than sideways. But their downfall was caused by the same forces that knock a line of dominoes on their faces. Floors on the top gave in, crashing through the floors below them. As each concrete floor fell, it added force to the collapse, making it harder for each floor to hold up against the increasing pressure. Once the top floors gave way, the rest of the catastrophe was inevitable. To be exact, many lives lost, but many saved. If the towers were never going to stay standing, why all the extra support? Was it futile after all? Suppose for a minute that the towers hadn't been built with all that reinforcement, that they'd collapsed a few minutes after being struck. The rubble at the side still would weigh 1,000,000 tons. The site still would have taken as long, but how many more people would have died? It's a figure no one wants to calculate. Thankfully, because a team of engineers and architects made the Trade Center as safe as it could possibly be. To sum up, I first recalled the disastrous episode of the fall of the World Trade Center. Then I explained how extraordinary the design is. After that, I summarized the reasons of its catastrophic collapse. That's it for today.
Now, you have 3 minutes to check your work. This is the end of Section A mini lecture.
Section B, interview.
In this section, you will hear one interview. The interview will be divided into two parts. At the end of each part, five questions will be asked about what was said. Both the interview and the questions will be spoken once only. After each question, there will be a 10-second pause. During the pause, you should read the four choices of A, B, C, and D, and mark the best answer to each question. You have 30 seconds to preview the questions. Now, listen to part one of the interview.
Good morning, listeners. As we all know, China has had an organized society of people being able to read and write for over 5,000 years. What we don't sometimes appreciate is the fact that they have had their fair share of inquiring scientific minds at work all this time. This has resulted in a well-recorded archive of Chinese medical knowledge that has grown and developed into the world's most advanced system of natural medicine. Today, we are honored to have Professor Wang from Shanghai University of Traditional Chinese Medicine to share with us her understanding of traditional Chinese medicine and its effect in Australia. Well, Professor Wang.
Thank you. Actually, I feel privileged to have this opportunity to meet you all.
To begin with, what is the essence of traditional Chinese medicine?
Harmony. Traditional Chinese medicine says that good health is associated with the balance of qi, which is an energy force that flows through the body. Qi can be hindered or helped by yin and yang, opposing forces that, when balanced, work harmoniously together. Over the centuries, traditional Chinese medicine has evolved complex methods of diagnosis and treatments tailored to the individual's subtle patterns of disharmony. This allows it not only to treat fully manifest diseases, but also to assist in maintaining health and balance to prevent illnesses from occurring.
Then how is a patient treated when disharmony occurs?
Chinese herbalists have discovered how to combine herbs so that the beneficial effects are maximized and the unwanted effects are minimized. This has led to the development of a large number of traditional herbal formulas that are designed to treat a wide variety of common imbalances. When prescribing, a Chinese herbalist will base his prescription on one or more of these traditional formulas, making minor adjustments for each individual.
Oh, I see. What does treatment generally consist of?
It consists of three main modalities. First, herbal medicine. Second, acupuncture and moxibustion. And third, massage and manipulation.
I often see patients receive acupuncture in hospitals here. Is it the best way of treatment?
Acupuncture is very popular in Australia, maybe because it was the first modality to be introduced and practiced by non-Chinese practitioners.
This is the end of part one of the interview. Questions 1 to 5 are based on what you have just heard.
Question 1. What is the essence of traditional Chinese medicine?
Question 2. What Chinese call the energy force that flows through the body?
Question 3. Which statement about Chinese medicine is true according to the interview?
Question 4. Which one is not the treatment of traditional Chinese medicine?
Question 5. According to Professor Wong, why is acupuncture so popular in Australia?
Now, listen to part 2 of the interview.
However, the major component of Chinese medical therapy is herbal medicine. There are several thousand different medicinal substances used by Chinese herbalists, most of which are derived from plants. Minerals and animal parts are also used. However, most of these are restricted by the Australian health authorities.
How about Chinese patients? I mean, in China, do patients normally get traditional Chinese medicine or Western treatment?
In modern China, traditional Chinese medicine is both taught as well as practiced alongside orthodox Western medicine. All of the major hospitals have Western and traditional Chinese departments, and patients are often referred from one department to the other. Thus, Chinese patients are able to receive the best that each system has to offer. If the case is serious, the patient may receive combined Chinese herbal and Western drug therapy. This has proven to be an extremely successful approach, with remarkable results being achieved in such cases as cancer care, recovery from stroke, skin disease, heart disease, post-operative care, etc.
Traditional Chinese medicine does wonders.
Actually, the best effect of traditional Chinese medicine is that it complements the weaknesses of orthodox medical treatments. One good example of this is the Chinese use of tonic medicines to strengthen and supplement parts of the body that have become weak or are not functioning at full capacity. In this way, traditional Chinese medicine successfully treats many chronic and degenerative conditions, boosting the immune system and restoring normal function.
Professor Wong, you have been staying in Australia for almost a year. How do you think of the development of traditional Chinese medicine here?
I see a big progress. In the last 3 decades, there has been a steady growth of traditional Chinese medicine in Australia. Several major universities now offer degree courses in this area. Chinese herbal medicines have been subject to clinical trials for some treatment conditions. In recent years, an increasing number of doctors regularly refer patients to qualified traditional Chinese medicine practitioners, and many people have found help and relief with traditional Chinese medicine after the failure of conventional methods. So there is great potential for further development.
That's true. Recognition by government has resulted in higher standards for practitioners and consistent quality and purity of the Chinese herbal medicines that are imported into Australia. Now it is possible for patients to make an informed choice and have the benefit of well-trained traditional Chinese medicine practitioners and high-quality medicines. Well, Professor Wong, thank you very much for telling us so much valuable information about traditional Chinese medicine.
My pleasure.
This is the end of Part 2 of the interview. Questions 6 to 10 are based on what you have just heard. Question 6. Where are most of medicinal substances derived from?
Question 7. What is Professor Wong's attitude towards combining traditional Chinese medicine with Western medicine?
Question 8. According to Professor Wong, what is the best effect of traditional Chinese medicine?
Question 9. Which statement is not true about the development of traditional Chinese medicine in Australia?
Question 10. How to guarantee the consistent quality and purity of the Chinese herbal medicines?